This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
That's right, you're with Lefty Pinkos here on Joy 94.9. It's Brian and Kath here for another fantastic week. We're pretty excited this week, aren't we, Kath?
We certainly are, because our guest this week is writer and former television producer Victor Marsh. Now, you may have seen Victor's other books. Tonight he's going to be talking about his new book, another one, Speak Now. That was pretty huge. That was about same-sex marriage and the debates around it.
Different perspectives around, that same-sex marriage, but yes, keep going, sorry.
And these days Victor lives in northern New South Wales, which is
your home ground.
My stomping ground. But he's lived all over the world and travelled all over the world and done those guru things.
And aside from that too, he's done some amazing television production stuff. And I've got a confession to make. I'm a bit of a nerd, people. And my favourite show growing up was Beyond 2000. And Victor was a producer on Beyond 2000 in the US. And he's also, just to kind of keep it joy, keep it queer, keep it gay and lesbian, he was also, for all you Kylie fans out there, involved with the first ever appearance of Kylie on Young Talent Time. But I mean, Victor's a fascinating man, and he's about to release a book called The Boy in the Yellow Dress. It's coming out of the press very soon. They're going to launch it down at the Hair Hole or Hares and Hyenas. Mm-hmm. And we've actually had a bit of a look at it, haven't we, Kath?
We've had a sneak preview.
He's given us a copy of it via email, and I read it with the intention to kind of maybe just get a sense of
it,
but I was taken in by it. So
couldn't put it down.
Yeah, it's like a beautiful book about Perth growing up gay in WA, on the outskirts in suburbia, with all those kind of trimmings that come with that kind of lifestyle and dealing with that.
The beauty, the conflicts, the sort of the mind of the child, the detail about that sort of suburban conformity and the way that people lived. It's really an extraordinary book, and so Victor is our guest tonight.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at Joy.
Getting retro here tonight on Lefty Pinkos
with
Joy 94.9. We've got Victor Marsh in the studio here with us, and he's a writer, a former television producer, a guru. What else?
A bit of an academic writer as well. You know, he's got a PhD and something else, and he was formerly an actor.
And he's picked tonight's music, but I want to ask, why did you pick that particular track?
Yeah, Victor, what's that one about?
Well, I'd been living the life of a monk, you know, in an ashram. I wasn't a guru. I'm still...
Actually, I called you a guru, and that's wrong.
No, I'm a student of a guru.
Right.
And he's still alive, and I'm still his student, and I hope to be his student beyond this life.
Aww.
He saved my life, man.
No, and how?
Oh, well, by showing me what really counts, you know, and how to tune into it every day.
Huh.
I do the practice he taught me here in Melbourne in 1972, I do it every morning still today. And there's no one marking the roll. It's just, you know, like you clean your teeth every day, why wouldn't you meditate and go back home, you know?
Very nice.
And it's like... I mean, tell me about this meditation, because it's not something I've never actually observed or been involved with, but is it just like silence and
You do it in the silence. It doesn't involve chanting or anything like that, but you have to sort of be aware that underneath all the doing, before doing, is being. And we're always doing, human doing, and we forget, well, what's the thing that allows all this to be, to the energy we draw upon to do all the shit we do, or do all the stuff we do, including thought. Thought is a doing too. But before all that, if you can learn how to get back there, and that's what he's an expert in, you recover the state of pure being, and that nourishes you from inside with peace. It's not like believing in God or going to a church or being in a religion. It's in your own being, what's the source of your being. So even if you are a gay person, whom the churches might find, you know, to be disapproved of, you're still being kept alive, you know, by this generous life force that you always take for granted. You never go back and actually explore its qualities, you know. And one of its qualities is this incredible peace. that nourishes you from within.
Now, you mentioned that he saved your life, though. I mean, is that being fatalistic, or is it being kind of just in the sense of he's enlightened you? I mean, what was going on?
Means in every sense, really, because tracing that time around 1972 here in Melbourne, you know, I'd been really into drugs, and you know, looking back now, I can trace about three or four ways I would be dead. You know, I would have got incredibly depressed. Mm-hmm. I would have had sneaky gay sex, you know, while I was in a relationship with a woman. I would have got HIV. I would have taken too many drugs and probably killed myself because I was so confused. I mean, they're all possible. They're all pathways I could have taken. But he showed me, well, before you do all that, just go back to first principles. And so it's saving my life now. And it's saving in the sense of like an investment, like saving your life, what's a life worth? And really realizing the value of it isn't in the quantity of what you do and what you know and all the things you can gather to you, but deepening your ability to be more fully here. And that's a practical process, you know, and going there every day, I appreciate the day more. I mean, I live near the ocean, luckily now, and to me that is the greatest luxury laid on by the most indulgent giver, whoever, and it's, I can go there. It's like I don't need to go to a resort, you know, and pay lots of money. I just go down to my local beach. So your appreciation shifts, you know, and you do appreciate the simple things, including your own breath, which is the source, you know.
Well, that answers the question. We're talking to Victor Marsh here on Lefty Pinkos. For the next hour, we're going to be talking about how Victor came to these places that he's come to, because he's done totally the spiritual thing. I mean, you know, 11 years living in an ashram thingy.
And we've only started the book, so we're not sure where it goes.
But I think
we've got a bit of an ending there. But there's so much more in terms of stories behind this man here. He is a beautiful writer and a captivating, engaging writer.
Yeah.
We'll be back with more chats after.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Oh, yeah. Is it still the 80s with Simply Red, or were they the 90s?
I think, yeah, late 80s, early 90s. We're kind of moving toward the 2000s.
Yeah, very slowly. Money Too Tight to mention it. And in response to that, Victor has just said we've got Victor Marsh in the studio with us tonight, writer, TV producer. His new book is coming out very soon, this week, I think. And Victor just said to us, Money's Too Tight to mention. That's a real theme song because I've always been poor. Now, that's a good a place as any to start, isn't it?
Yeah,
Victor,
poverty. Tell
what
us
do you
about
mean by
poverty.
That? Yeah.
Well, I've had too interesting a life. I mean, I see people who've really got focus and they can focus on, you know, making money and investing money and understanding how money works. And to me, it's like that's always been the last thing I think about. So now at the age of, you know, the tender age of 69.
Tomorrow. Happy birthday.
I find that I haven't really made proper provisions. And, you know, Warren Trust says I spent it all on, you know, on those cruises.
Voyages, you know, cruises or something.
On cruises. And yeah. I didn't go on a cruise, you know.
No cruises here.
No. But I've had two interesting times. And the whole time I was, you know, living as a monk, of course, there's no income.
Yeah, right.
Before that, I was a radical actor at the Pram Factory, you know, $40 a week. And I was one of the paid people. $40 a week.
Wow.
And, you know, even in TV, Australian production staff don't get paid very well. At least
really?
They didn't in my day.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
And when I was living in LA and working for Beyond 2000 in LA, they thought they were paying me more money because the American dollar back then was higher.
Yeah.
Value. So they thought they were, and every time the American dollar went up, they thought they were paying me more. And I'm sitting in LA on the same salary for years, you know. But anyway, there are other ways to discover riches in one's life, as
and
I was trying to.
Perhaps you can tell us a bit about that, because then if money hasn't mattered, what has?
Well, it's the quality of life, as I said before, not the quantity. I mean, how do you really enjoy every moment? I think that's the real essence of the Buddhists talk about skillful means, you know, and what's a life worth, and what's living a good life really mean? Is it sort of following a set of moral strictures that have been given to you? Look, we've gone from money to morals. That was quick,
yeah.
Wasn't it? What a
no
segue.
Messing around here.
But I don't know. I'm having such a good time. It's almost shameful. Warren Truss is right. I'm having a really good time, Warren, but I'm doing it on a very small pension.
No, I want to actually just cut to the chase because you are a writer and you are a beautiful writer, Warren. You're a beautiful... I'm caught up on Warren, sorry, Victor. But you're a beautiful writer. Aww. And, I mean, yeah, we got your manuscript for The Boy in the Yellow Dress last week, and I thought I'd sort of, you know, look into it and have a bit of a read, and I just engaged with it, and Kath has felt the same way in picking up the book today and just going, whoa, this is really special, because you've got, tell us about your writing, like, why do you write?
Well, I never thought I was going to write a book. That was the last thing I was interested in writing, because I thought to write a book you had to make stuff up, and I wasn't interested in making anything up. I used to write, you know, story files and research files and sometimes little short TV scripts. And to me, writing was just utilitarian. You just did it because you had to do it and try and make it clear. I never wanted to write creatively. And then, but my fabulous lesbian sister had a wonderful Maori girlfriend, whom I thank in the acknowledgements, who said to me for years, she was a little bit psychic, you're supposed to write a book. And I thought,
really?
Give me a break. You know, I'm too busy to write a book. She even sent me a gold pen through the mail. And then after I went back to Perth for my father's funeral from Los Angeles. This is the long story.
After the funeral,
my sister and I were negotiating over the family photo album because I'd always travelled all over the world. I never collected any photographs. And suddenly we had this stash of family photos and we were negotiating who got what. And I found a photograph of myself as a little boy taken in a room where I remembered doing something. And that is my first memory. So after the funeral, went down to Bridgetown in Southwest Australia, and my sister's girlfriend, Kate Hansen, the lovely Kate Hansen from Christchurch, she locked me in a room, said, "You're not coming out till you've written a story." She finally had me where she wanted me.
Wow.
And I thought, well, I can't bloody make anything up. But I had just recalled this memory of the yellow dress. So I just simply wrote that scene and thought, there, I've done it now. You can let me out. And then I thought I'd done my job. And then a year later, I thought, well, there's another half to that story. There's like finding the photograph and, you know, doing all that. So I wrote that about a year later. And then I thought, well, then I went to some writing classes at a gay and lesbian institute in LA to try and keep myself sane. Mm-hmm. And I had to produce something each week, you know. So I thought, well, I'll write about the stuff that happened in between. I just wanted to write scenes.
Oh, wow, is that how it started? That's amazing.
And I just, you know, then I realised I had a half dozen scenes. I thought, if I strung these together, like poils on a string, you know, I'd have... Oh, God, I'm not writing a book, am I? You know what I mean? I was so reluctantly dragged into it. And I never took it seriously until I came back to Australia with shingles after working too long in television.
And stressed from,
stressed out, man. It's a young people's industry. And I had one of those moments, just sitting at home in this little house I got. What do I do now with the rest of my life? Because I was 59 or something. What do I do now? And I thought, well, if... And I really had that moment that people talk about. What do I do with the rest of my life? And I thought, well, I'd like to take that book seriously. And bingo, within a couple of months, I was in a writing program. I was given a living stipend. They accepted my research proposal. And like,
wow. Well done.
4 years later, I came out with a PhD. Excuse me. So that turned into more academic writing first. And even though I started The Boy in the Yellow Dress way before, I wrote the book on Christopher Isherwood and the book on same-sex marriage and lots of academic articles, always avoiding
this
the one thing that I had to really write, which was the story of how a sissy boy survives in a redneck society.
Could you read us, please, Victor, the extract about the yellow dress? Because it is a starting point within the book and it's a captivating starting point. So could you please share it with our listeners?
Thank you very much. Well, this is after the funeral and after my sister and I have, you know, been haggling over the photos. And this is the scene I remembered from when I was between 3 and 4 years old. It's called Child's Play. In the formal sitting room, the curtains are drawn. Thick carpet and upholstered furniture muffle all sound. The boy seeks out this place to be alone. But first, he goes into the room across the hall, to the cupboard where his mother's dresses hang, bereft of form, awaiting their brief moments of coming to life, all fullness and motion then. He climbs into the wardrobe to reach for one of these that's special to him. It glows, dappled yellow flecked with green. Clambering down from the cupboard, he slips the gown over his head to hang loose around him, its folds cascading onto the floor. Silky textures cool where it skims his skin. Women's voices murmur in the kitchen. Suitably attired, the boy returns to the sitting room where he twirls slowly in the half-light, head cocked, gazing down at the skirt as it rises around him in the air. Entranced by its golden glow, he settles down to sit on his heels, spreading the ample folds of fabric in a perfect circle around him on the floor. Eyes closed, he rests in peace, ears singing in the silence. A cone of light coming into space above where his head was, its base coinciding with the dresser's circle shape upon the floor. Dust motes float lazy in the light. But one day when he reaches into the cupboard, the cool fabric isn't there to meet his touch. He wants to catch the magic feeling, wrap it round him, disappear. He tries the cupboard again, but no matter how carefully he repeats his actions, he fails to make the dress appear. A heavy feeling, like dread, hangs in his chest. Another day, he's in the washhouse in the backyard. A copper tub squats above the fireplace where they boil the water to wash the clothes on Mondays. Sifting through the ashes, he finds the charred remains of the dress, this lovely thing banished to dirty dust in his hands. In the foul run, a hen murmurs cluck, cluck, slow. The heaviness returns to roost in him as inside the house, a door clicks shut.
Oh, Victor Marsh, reading from his book due to come out this week, The Boy in the Yellow Dress. You're with Cass and Brian here, Lefty Pinko's on Joy. We're speaking to Victor for the next half hour. Stay with us.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Well, that's a change of pace on Lefty Pinko's. Perhaps, Victor, you could tell us who was that and what was that song?
Oh, that's I first heard Victoria de Los Angeles singing that, but that's Kathleen Alger. I don't know how you pronounce her name. Mm. And it's from Songs of the Auvergne, which is a beautiful French provincial song sung in dialect, but set for orchestra in about 1920 by this guy Joseph Canteloube, who was a colleague or a compatriot of Maurice Ravel. So it's got this glorious, lush sound, even though they're simple provincial songs, you know. Mm-hmm. And when I came out, the ashram, I was in the ashram and there wasn't much sort of stimulation on that level. And I worked for the Australian Dance Theatre for a while when they reformed.
Oh, they were fantastic.
And
I loved them.
The first production they did was seven songs, which was Songs from the Auvergne. So every day coming, peeling out of the rehearsal studio with this delirious music, and I was in heaven.
Because they work with robots and stuff, don't they?
I don't know what they do now.
They've gotten into really robotic stuff, extensions of the body.
They've got
thing,
really fantastic. They're really cutting edge.
I love those guys.
They collapsed way back when, and then they reformed with dancers from the Ballet Rambert in London.
Huh.
And happened across them and they gave me a job and I just had this gorgeous music every day.
Now, Victor, tell us about your time with the Pram Factory, because it was like a hotbed of theatrical activity, but it was very centred around politics.
Mm. Absolutely.
I kind of, you mentioned Helen Garner, and I mean, John Romerell's a local playwright who's highly politicised and amazing with his output, but who else was involved with Pram Factory and why did you get involved with them politically?
Well, Jack Hibbard was there too. And Graham Blundell, and who writes for The Australian these days, and also the amazing Max Gillies.
Yes. I would love him.
And you know that whole series of political caricatures
he
did? Mm-hmm. The first one, which nobody remembers because he never did it on television, was Billy McMahon. And it was the most hilarious thing I think I've ever seen in the theatre, because Billy was rather short. Evelyn Crape played Lady Sonia. And she's not that tall. So in order to be shorter than her, he did the entire performance on his knees with a pair of sort of clown shoes that is, and it was and a bald pate, and it was just the most unerringly accurate, you know, first one of his political caricatures. And I was there mostly at the beginning because I'd been agitating for the cause of Australian writing for the stage. Because way back when I grew up, you could only hear on radio or on television, you know, posh British mock accents or American ones on commercial radio. And on the stage, everything was either from the West End or from Broadway.
Yes.
Yep. The Australian voice was not heard on the stage.
That's right.
Mm. And these people were, and I was in Perth, you know, writing angry, you know, columns in the newspaper, and they came across to do, you know, performances at the Festival of Perth. They did White with Wire Wheels, a John Romerell play, I think that was John Romerell, and a few things like that. And so they lured me over here because I was committed to the same cause, and I found myself among a bunch of pinky leftos and, you know, and radical feminists, who, you know, and actors who didn't believe in the writer, you know, the tyranny of the writer, the hegemony of the written word. And, I mean, it was such a bun fight. It was like an Indian parliament working there. It was, it was cool. I shouldn't say anything about India, you know, but it was a real hot
bit. Particularly they've got a right-wing government now. But anyway.
Yes, I wonder why we're talking about politics. But so it was like I just found myself right in the deep end, and it was so stimulating.
Mm-hmm.
And there were education reformers there too, Bill and Lorna Hannan, who revolutionised secondary education, especially teaching of English in Victorian schools. We did a whole play about the Victorian education system. You know, and we did the first play by the Women's Theatre Group called Betty Can Jump, directed by Helen Garner, who was at that stage married to Graham Blundell.
Wow, all these stars there.
And I was the only male considered ideologically circumspect enough, or maybe I was just tame enough, to be the only man in that production of Betty Can Jump, you know. So it was really the deep end. And I remember Dennis Altman came along.
Oh, wow, yeah.
And he had just
published... American director.
Like no.
Oh, so you're talking about
Dennis
Latrobe, just retired professor emeritus at Latrobe, who wrote Homosexual Liberation and Oppression.
Yes,
he's been one of our guests. I'm so embarrassed now.
No, let it go.
But he came along, and he was so brave. I'm sitting in the back, and we had a meeting of the collective, and Dennis so bravely presented, you know, the sort of the case for gay liberation to a bunch of really radical Carlton politicos, you know, who weren't that sympathetic. Although I found it afterwards, there were a couple of people like me in the closet. You know?
Oh, you were closeted with all these groovy people.
Yes, I was in the closet from a very young age. It took me a long time to come out.
But I would have thought the Pram Factory people might sort of bring that out in you. But
well, what I realise now, especially talking to Helen now and Carrie Dwyer, was they're all looking at me going, doesn't he know he's gay?
You come out, it's like, not a surprise.
Yes.
Speaking of trailblazers, though, Dorothy Hewitt. Oh. I mean, she's an old lefty pinko communist and trailblazer, poet, playwright.
Goddess.
You've been in one of her plays, yeah?
Yeah.
How was that?
Well, so I was an undergrad in WA, and they were wise enough to actually hire her onto the staff of the English department.
Wow. Yeah.
As a writer, they actually hired a writer to teach literature, you know. And she was just a fantastic presence, you know, and so accepting. And she did a fantastic play called The Chapel Perilous. And we used to do a lot of plays in the Festival of Perth, and it was the first performance. And I think I played four roles. I played a nun, a communist lawyer, a lesbian schoolgirl, and something else. I can't remember what the other role was. And I had to do them all, you know, with
that is so
small
bent.
Costume changes. But, yeah, Dorothy was amazing. And I remember when she came back from Russia, where she saw the reality of Stalinism, and she renounced her communist ties in this lecture theatre at UWA, and it was electrifying. And there were all these people sitting there in suits, and I wondered who they were. And I reckon it was the secret police.
In
A Chapel Perilous, there's a whole sequence where her main character has to go before the Petrov Commission.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone knows about the McCarthy hearings in Washington, but what about the Petrov Commission in Canberra? She was brought up before that and having to answer for her political beliefs. And yet she's one of the most conscientious people in the country. You know, these popes have to make Pope's saints now because they're running out of the real deal, in my humble opinion. But I reckon I've known a few saints and really brave people who've pushed the envelope, you know, and she's one of my culture heroes. Thank you for picking up on that.
No, I love her too, and I hear what you say when it comes to trailblazing cultural heroes. You're with Lefty Pinkos here on Joy 94.9. It's Brian and Kath chatting to Victor Marsh, a beautiful writer who's releasing a book,
The Boy in the Yellow Dress.
Boy in the Yellow Dress. We'll be back with more chats.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
How dreamy is that?
That was lovely.
It's wonderful, I believe.
João Gilberto.
Oh, we love
Brazilian
a bit of...
Jazz.
Brazilian.
A bit of Latin. Mm. Very nice. Here, it's coming up to 10 to 9 on Joy. You're with Lefty Pinkos, Kath and Brian here, and we're talking to Victor Marsh. Now, you know, if you've been listening for the hour, you would have heard by now that Victor was there when Kylie Minogue first sang. He was there working on Beyond 2000 in Los Angeles. He was there at the Pram Factory way back. He was there, as it turned out, the first Aquarius Festival in Canberra, wherever he was there. And then I said, well, I bet your love life must have been amazing then, being a little interest of mine. And he said the following. What did you answer to that, Victor?
What did I say? I can't remember.
Something about 3 years.
Quoting me out of context, I think.
Yeah, like,
you said your love life wasn't exactly the biggest and best you'd ever heard of.
No. And you know, at this age, I'm 69 tomorrow.
Well done.
It's not that important. But, you know, I love human beings, you know, and I love women, you know, but I love them in a different way from the way I love men, I suppose. But no, I haven't had much success, if you sort of quantify it. No, I've had 3 relationships in my life, and each one lasted about 3 years, and I don't think that adds up to much in 69 years.
No, I don't suppose it does. Does it really?
Yeah. I asked that kind
so
of...
So I'm still available.
Available.
Yeah, I mean, I asked Victor during the break, like, are you longing for love in my kind of, you know, hapless romantic kind of tone, but you're not, are you? I mean, tell us about how you answered that during that song break.
Well, I'm afraid I'm not longing for anything. Here I go. I'm going to preach. Look
no,
out.
Please
go
do.
For it. Go for it. Yep.
Well, my guru's been trying to teach me for 41 years now that what I'm looking for is actually inside of me. And I go into this quite a lot in the book. I spend a lot of time describing the experience of meditation, recovering the experience of intense satisfaction that comes from within. So if I do enter into a relationship, I'm not there neurotically seeking for the thing that I'm missing, because he's shown me how to close the circle, how to complete the circle. If I break the circle and look outside going, where's that thing that I need? Of course, I'll be in that state of mind. But there's another state that pre-exists all those states of incompleteness. And it's the source of our life. And when you go there, like I do every day as a formal practice, the satisfaction comes from within. So if Mr. Right comes along, that's a bonus.
Right.
But I'm not hanging out for it.
Well, good for you.
But I'm good energy to have. Yeah. You know, they say it falls into your lap when you least expect it.
You know, no one likes a desperate person.
No, I've tried that.
And, you know,
I've tried that approach. That doesn't work either.
Now, look, your book is coming out this week. Who's publishing it first?
The very brave, courageous, independent Melbourne publisher, Gordon Thompson at Clouds of Magellan.
Wow. Okay.
And he doesn't get any kind of subsidy from anybody. He's a courageous independent, you know.
Fantastic.
He publishes a lot of books of gay and lesbian interest and books about alternative spirituality while being true to his progressive Christian experience.
Wow.
He's the most remarkable man, and he's got a wonderful wife too. But yeah, I had to talk him out of closing down shop because he's got so many interests himself. Huh. And I said, please just put out one more book out
Yours.
Of complete self-interest. And he did. And he's done a couple more too.
And it's coming out this week. The opening, the launch is on Thursday night?
No, Saturday night.
Sorry, Saturday night at the Hare Hole.
Yes, at Hares and Hyenas.
In Fitzroy.
Which is a marvellous venue.
Oh, too right.
It's licensed. You can even get a cocktail.
You can.
Yes, that's the whole point, I think. Now, and my understanding is that book actually finishes 20 years ago. Like, it's like memoir part one.
Mm.
And you're now working on memoir part two.
Yes, I was going to call it Diary of a Nobody Part Deux. No, it's called Victor Goes to Hollywood.
Oh, wow.
It's about
lovely.
The Hollywood years. Yeah.
Lovely.
What happened in Hollywood? Can you just give us a quick summary?
Well, I went there when I was working for Beyond Chaos, 2000, but they didn't pay very well. So when I got a green card, because I now hold dual citizenship, I can talk half and half, you know.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I got to work on American shows.
Right.
And very crazy stuff. And I worked a lot of medical stories on various shows. It was interesting, but it really kept me from what I was meant to do, which was to write this book.
Wow.
But I ended up with shingles. 20 years in television here in Australia and then in America, and I ended up really burned out.
Like really sick when you came back.
Yeah, even though I meditated every day. If the call time was early, I'd just get up early enough to meditate beforehand. But sometimes it's the situation that has to change.
If you were going to give any advice to any young writer out there, you know, wanting to do their memoirs thing, can you give people a tip? Should they wait until they're your age to start writing? What do you think?
Oh, no, some of the best writers are the young ones. But, no, what I found my way back to it through doing hypnotherapy training.
Huh.
Finding a way to revive experiences from the past and capturing them for lost memories, you know, not making them up, but because... have we got time to go into that?
There's probably not really. You could sort of glance on it for a moment.
Well, there's I talk about this a little bit in the article I wrote for Griffith Review, issue number 42. I wrote a piece called A Touch of Silk, A Postmodern Fairy Tale. And nice. I talk about this psychoanalyst in the States called Fromm, Erich Fromm.
Yep.
And he said that experience cannot enter awareness unless it's recognized and received by a set of culturally and socially implanted and approved categories. So if you have experiences that are outside the frame of the culture you grew up in, they tend to slip from memory. So I've found a way to bring them back. I don't know if that's any advice towards a young writer. I might have to do a whole workshop on it.
It's something to think about.
Victor, it's been fantastic. And I just want to give you one last plug. It's this weekend, Saturday night at the Hare Hole or Hares and Hyenas in Fitzroy. Get along to Victor's book launch. It's The Boy in the Yellow Dress. And it is a sumptuous, beautiful book. Kath and I are about a third way through it.
I'm going back to it tonight, man.
I'll be back on it, yeah, myself. And yeah, I can't implore you enough, people, to get down and get a copy of the book because it is political, it is social, it is queer. There's all these beautiful things. And it's actually like these chronological chapters or vignettes that kind of amount to this beautiful exploration of, an amazing life, basically. So get the book, read it, and enjoy it. Thanks, Victor.
Thank you.
See you all next week.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.